This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. John Waters' new movie, Serial Mom, just opened. So today we're presenting old and new interviews with Waters, plus a 1988 interview with his late leading lady, Divine. John Waters is proud to make movies in bad taste. His cult film, Pink Flamingos, was billed as an exercise in bad taste. The story involved two couples vying for the title of the filthiest people alive. All of Waters' early super low-budget films had a self-imposed X rating. His recent films have gotten him out of the midnight movie circuit into the multiplexes. His biggest hit was Hairspray, about a chubby teen who becomes the star of a TV dance show. Serial Mom is a comedy about a perfect housewife who kills neighbors whose imperfections irritate her. John Waters has always been fascinated by the criminal mind. When I spoke with him in 1985, he'd been teaching in a Maryland prison.
It basically grew out of my fascination with going to murder trials. It was the next logical step. That I basically, there's something in me where I need the company of murderers about once a week. Because it really fascinates me. And I'm not saying I approve of murder or anything like that. It's the one thing I like to figure out why people do things. I mean, I've always been interested in abnormal psychology, all that kind of thing. And So I knew a person that taught there as a living, and he brought me in as a guest teacher a few times, and I showed my films. And I really wanted to get a job there. I thought it would be interesting, and it was, of course, irony to get a paycheck from the state of Maryland to rehabilitate people by showing them my films. I thought was rather strange. So I went to talk to the warden, who was a woman who was belied the big bird cage and that kind of female prison warden. And she was at first concerned I wanted to make like a documentary exposing the prison. I think this is a good prison. I mean, they're under psychiatric care. They have to keep up or they're put back in the bad prisons. So that's how it started. And I showed them all my films. My book, Shock Value, was required reading. I think it's the only college in the country that had my book as a textbook. And I got a lot out of it, and they got a lot out of it, I think. I don't think I was bad for them. I told them, look, everybody wants to murder somebody every once in a while, but don't do it. Draw it. Write a story about it. I said, these films are my crimes, only I get paid for it. And at first, they were kind of bewildered to hear that, but I don't think that's bad advice.
You've actually, in your films, I mean, they're comedies, yeah, but they are a lot about people who are desperate or who are criminals,
yeah,
who are performing really taboo or criminal, yeah, acts. What was it like for you to meet the real thing, to meet people who really were psychopaths or really are murderers and,
yeah,
rapists?
The difference is that they are much more normal. They look like a college class in any community, I think. They do not look, what's the expression,
banality of evil.
Yes,
yeah.
That is the thing that impressed me the most. That was very difficult to connect the faces of some of these people who I liked, genuinely liked as people, to the horror that they must have caused other people. But once they're in prison, they're very different from maybe how they were when they committed their crimes. I would say half of all the people I had were always Vietnam veterans, which was many of them, angel dust was involved. Those were the two most common denominators of the people I had. This prison, though, is not for career criminals. It's people that are emotionally disturbed but not legally insane. So maybe most of them had no record and then one day killed three people. Or, I mean, the stories were amazing. But I told them I wouldn't exploit them. And in my article in American Film about it, I don't tell anything of what happened to them. Because I thought that would be unfair. I mean, to go in, and they confided in me and told me all. I was like, in a way, a therapist, only I had no say if they got out or not, which their therapist did. It was a very interesting experience for me. I mean, but there was humor always involved, and we talked a lot about that. In the most desperate, horrible situations, there you can still laugh. And I don't mean laugh at what you did, but see the humor in these horrible situations. I mean, I went to the graduation where they wore caps and gowns and afterwards went back to a life sentence. What could that feel like?
There's a lot of people who believe in a lot of sociologists who say that showing violent movies encourages people to be violent, and that showing movies about crime might encourage people to commit them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that, having worked with,
we talked about
prison,
but you'd be,
yeah,
surprised at the films they show in prison. I mean, they show sometimes hardcore pornography, which shocked me. We talked about that. We had a whole class about that. I don't think my films are what they mean because they're comedies, but we're talking about things like maybe the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or something like that. And some of them said that some of the people that were really violent psychopaths would watch them the same way someone would watch pornography, to be turned on by them. And that is a question there's no answer to. I agree. But if you, then nobody can see those movies because one person reacts like that. I don't think that's fair either. I mean, he can get turned on by that from turning on television too. These people, some of them, when they saw the films, they acted just like my parents. They were very straight. They would say, why would you make a movie like that? But in the same way, I think they figured, if I could make a living doing this on the streets, there was hope for all of them, I think, in the long run.
Whoever would have thought that your films would be used in a therapeutic, rehabilitative context?
Well, in a way, you think of it, the Pink Flamingos, if that can freak out society's outlaws, where that humor was more dangerous to them than the hideous things they did with guns and everything, that they could freak out people that did that maybe isn't bad, because they realized that you could use something like that to be antisocial, but it's not going to hurt anybody.
So do you see yourself as socially redeeming now?
Only in jail, in a weird kind of way, that I didn't go in there for that reason, but I don't think I was bad for them in the long run.
Was it depressing to spend a lot of time
in prison?
No,
it was not at all depressing to me. If I had to do it every day, I thought about that. If I went in there every day and that was my job, maybe. This was once a week. I look forward to it. I miss it. You know, I went back last week as a substitute teacher.
Did you ever think that if you turned out differently that you might have been in prison?
No, that's the whole reason the whole thing obsesses me, is because I could have been in there. I think that there was certainly a possibility that in my life I could have ended up in jail if I didn't have an outlet for the rage that the films gave me. Because everybody needs that outlet, and they didn't have one. I think rage is certainly healthy. I don't think it's bad. And everybody has it, or else they're pretty dull. People that have no rage, I think, are usually milquetoast personalities.
Two of the people who you've worked with a lot are Divine, who's a really big man who plays the leading lady in all your movies, and the late Edie Massey.
Yeah.
Did it ever seem like the joke was on them, especially on Edie, who...
I know.
Here's what I'm asking, that they're both really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And in your movies would appear in really revealing clothes that would accentuate every fold in the flesh that would hang over their stomachs and thighs and rears. And you could interpret it as kind of making fun of their size.
I don't think I was. I really like people that society has branded as outsiders who turn what they're discriminated against into a militant style. And that's why the whole image of Divine came up. A person that is fat does not usually wear skin-tight cocktail dresses. With Edie, only in one movie was she dressed really like that, in Female Trouble, in her black leather suit. Edie, I think you could always tell in the films, I liked her. You know, and I did like Edie. I never thought I was making fun of Edie. I think Edie was a very gifted comedian in her own wacky kind of way. I don't think anybody could imitate her. I think she was like nobody else. She had a delivery that was like nobody else, and she had a voice like nobody else. Edith certainly was made to look grotesque sometimes, yes. But I think that you liked her still. I don't think that you were laughing at her. I hope not.
So you see it as different than, say, Fellini's use of grotesques in his movies?
I think Fellini loves his grotesque too, though. Have you seen this book, Fellini Faces? It's just all the people that have sent him resumes through the years, and it's unbelievable. I think he respects those people. I certainly do. I think that I don't want to look like that, I'll be honest. But, you know, Divine just lost 92 pounds. I'm so afraid he's going to end up real skinny, and we'll have to make the Karen Carpenter story. That'll be the only movie we can make.
John Waters recorded in 1985. John Waters' new movie is called Serial Mom. This is Fresh Air.